The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the ShopTates.com studios.
It's a good Thursday. Thanks for being with us, Brad Sesmat. Sports360AZ.com. And, of course, AZCentralSports.com, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter at Brad Sesmat. It is a good Thursday. Long weekend right around the corner. We are pump psych geeked for today's show, as always. Always, because we're Arizona-centric. Eric Metz is going to join us in studio. Eric Metz is one of the, I'd say, preeminent NFL attorney/agents in the National Football League. The Combine is next week. He's a Scottsdale guy. Things that I see around the state of Arizona, sit and talk football with Eric Metz. Who does he have lined up for the Combine next week? He was Ken Wisenhunt's agent, was. What does he make out of the whole thing with Jonathan Martin and Richie Incognito today? Michael Sam, how does he advise his clients in terms of social media? How do you get in the business of being an agent? A lot of you guys are watching this show right now at your place of work saying, I would rather be anywhere than here. I'd much rather be working in the National Football League out watching college kids. It's not that easy. This guy has been at the business for a long, long time. And he's one of the most respected and is, again, right here in Scottsdale. So we'll visit with Eric Metz in studio. That is coming up. A lot on my mind. Eric Sorensen, as always, Senior Executive Vice President of Nothing, starts us off with his Facebook question of, I shouldn't say nothing. I haven't called you that in a long time.
Yeah, it just depends on the day. Anyway, today's Facebook question is this, Brad. The Diamondbacks made it official yesterday. They introduced free agent signee Bronson Arroyo, who joins a somewhat crowded spring training rotation.
It's really not that crowded, but go ahead.
It is. Well, it is. Count on your fingers. They have more than five. You need five. They have more than five.
When it's all said and done, I think it'll work itself out.
Anyway, regardless, one of those that could be in the rotation is Archie Bradley, who we've had on the show before, one of the high risers, the former first-round pick. The organization says that Bradley will still have a chance to make the rotation. Today's question, true or false, the signing of Arroyo will impede Bradley's fast track to the majors.
Now, yesterday we had Luis Gonzalez on the show. And if you read between the lines of Luis Gonzalez and Archie Bradley, there's no question he's going to be in the rotation. Just reading between the lines. I don't have the sound here in front of me, but the tone of his voice and what Archie Bradley's all about, and he's the most excited player for Luis to see, is Archie Bradley this spring training. Okay. Bronson Arroyo was represented by guys that represented Gonzo.
Sure.
It's kind of interesting how that conversation just was pretty much laid out there, I thought.
So he'll be one of the five, even though right now they have seven?
Someone will get hurt, because that always happens in spring.
True.
Okay. I mean, you could call it eight by July, Daniel Hudson, right?
Very true.
So I think when Luis said yesterday about Bradley, what does he have left to show down on the farm because he's dominated everybody? Does he need to go to Reno?
Not really.
It's a nice luxury, I suppose. I mean, look, do you need to take Archie Bradley to Australia? No, you don't, because he's not going to be pitching in the first few games, right?
Right.
So Archie Bradley could stay here. He could throw on the side. He could throw in an instruction. He could throw anywhere he wants. You know, go over to the side field and get your work in. In the calendar, I haven't counted their days off yet in the first two or three weeks. Could you send him down to the farm because they don't need a fifth starter until fill in the blank? That's one of those topics that usually it works itself out where every spring, oh my gosh, what are they going to do? They have too many arms.
And I know it's sort of apples to oranges, but the organization already went through something with a young pitcher when they had Trevor Bauer. And I know Trevor Bauer and Archie Bradley on the field, off the field are two completely different people. But keep in mind, they sort of rushed along Bauer, who had great success in the minors.
Completely.
And then fell out of favor with the organization and goodbye.
He's not doing anything in Cleveland.
He's
either.
Not.
He's not.
Not.
Well, look, you could go right down the path of Jared Parker and Tyler Skaggs and all these arms that they've had that have come and gone for various reasons. So,
some panned out, some didn't.
Yeah, or some you had to use as trade assets.
Facebook.com/sports360AZ. Go over there and like the page and share your input.
I like that. Let's get you caught up some of the things on my mind in the world of sports, brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino in the beautiful White Mountains. The Winter Games are next week. I know it feels like summer, but they're going to have the winter games next week. They're going to have the Mountain Mutt. They're going to have all sorts of fun for you to be at the Honda Resort and Casino just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. The Honda Resort and Casino, they've been a part of Sports 360 AZ since day number one. Appreciate the Honda Resort and Casino. Head on up there. Stay at the Honda Resort and Casino. Go to Sunrise. They make some snow. You can do some sledding. You can do some skiing. Do all that. And then, of course, eat some great food, have some fun, pull down the slots. That's at the Honda Resort and Casino. Eric Metz joins us here in studio in a couple of minutes to talk about a lot of National Football League stuff. So the story, you know, this show is, we're so Arizona-centric and so college football as one of our key platforms. So to me, the story of the day, I'm going to talk about the Suns at the All-Star break. I watched Team USA this morning. I was up at 5:30 working away on the show. I've got U of A ASU tomorrow night. But when I saw that Rich Rodriguez is not happy over this rules change, this is not just a minor thing, guys. If you're an Arizona State Sun Devil football fan, as well as a University of Arizona Wildcat football fan, or if your college that you're a fan of plays a spread offense or plays a hurry-up offense is probably the better way to go. This rule that the college football folks are trying to sneak past when you've got Jonathan Martin and Richie Incognito going on, you have Michael Sam coming out, you have the Olympic Games going on. Oh, it's a dead period. We'll just kind of sneak this one on through, and then next year it's, huh? We just got hosed. So here's the deal. The NCAA Football Rules Committee made two proposals yesterday. Okay, the first one is they're going to amend the targeting rule. I like the targeting rule. It would eliminate a 15-yard penalty when an ejected player is ruled eligible to return to a game. The other proposal, though, listen to this. The other proposal would allow for defenses to have 10 seconds to sub in players after each snap. The rule proposal is designed to have player safety in mind, not necessarily to slow down offenses, but that is just what it would help to do. Under the proposed rule, get this, offenses would not be allowed to snap the football until the play clock hits 29 seconds. Well, if you've had a pulse at all during the Todd Graham era, left lane hammer down, if you've had a pulse at all and have watched Arizona State football, what is it that they like to do? They like to go hurry up. What is it that Rich Rodriguez, up tempo, call whatever you want. Rich Rodriguez, exact same way. Now, I've not heard yet from Todd Graham. I reached over to some people at Arizona State, some of the coaches today, to get some reaction on this. But Rich Rodriguez is not happy. Rich Rodriguez went on Twitter to get after this. So he tweets out, "So I hear the Football Rules Committee wants to slow the game down. Make you wait 10 seconds to snap and penalty is delay of game. Hashtag wow." More Rich Rod, "When you snap the ball has always been a fundamental edge for the offense. What's next? Three downs like Canada? Hashtag let's get boring." More Rich Rod, "Fundamental advantage for defense, pre-snap movement. Maybe that should be reviewed. Hashtag who makes these rules?" So the Wildcats were seventh in the nation in plays per game last season. U of A averaged 83 plays per game. So on the surface, as I'm hearing this, I'm really looking forward to talking to Eric Metz about this in studio in a couple minutes. The Wildcats had some plays per game average in 2012 as well, where they were over 80 plays per game. Now, is this about player safety? Well, last time I checked, the defense is going to be taking part in 80 plays as well, too, or 70 plays as well, too. You have to have better conditioned players. Eric, when you hear this, I think this penalizes Arizona State Sun Devil football and penalizes U of A football.
No question. We've had Richard on the show plenty of times, and one of the times we had him on, he had probably one of the funniest quotes that I've heard since he's been in Tucson. He called the huddle the biggest waste of time in college football. So if that gives you any indication of how fast he wants his offense to move, these rules are definitely going to hurt both schools.
They would. I think for Todd Graham's team,
Norvell likes to run.
Their goal
is what? Between 90 and 100 plays?
Right, and fans love to see up-tempo. Okay, it's a decided advantage for Arizona State. If you're playing up-tempo and you're playing a game in September and you're at home and you're able to wear down another team because you're the better conditioned, the better fit team, You know, I just think that this is something that is wrong on the Rules Committee. And to try to make it seem like, well, you've got 10 seconds. It's unfair for the offense to be running players or running plays because the defense can't substitute. I don't get that at all. An early snap would result in a 5-yard delay of game penalty. So let's say it's late in the game. And God knows the Pac-12 officials sometimes are brutal. In fact, a lot of times are brutal. Let's say it's late in the game. And let's say you're trying to get plays off because you're down. And let's say you have one of these plays where the clock hits 30, then 2:29, and they throw a flag and it was that close because, well, you went too fast and the defense couldn't get players on the field. Too bad. Tough. Man, the wussification sometimes in football drives me crazy when you watch the game and how it used to be played. So that's on my mind, and I'm not happy about that. On the other side, we're going to bring in Eric Metz. We'll talk some NFL football with Eric Metz. Also, we'll hear from Sean Miller. A little bit about Syracuse, Mariano Rivera on Derek Jeter, and much more as we continue on. Football talk next with Eric Metz. I'm Brad Sussmat. Sports360AZ.com. White Mountain Radio, AZ Central Sports, and of course on Twitter at Brad Sussmat.
React and interact to our Facebook question of the day. Like our page at facebook.com/sports360AZ.
Sports360AZ.com, AZCentralSports.com, White Mountain Radio on Twitter, at Brad Sussmat, Facebook as well. Appreciate everybody jumping on board. Eric Metz joins us in studio now. We've had Eric on in the past when we talk about agents and sports and attorneys, president, founding partner, LMM Management. He's getting ready for the combine. Always good to see you. How are things?
Everything's fantastic.
Yeah?
Looking forward to the combine.
So it's combine, and how many players do you have this year in the draft?
Only need one when it's Greg Robinson. We've got a guy that could potentially be the first pick in the draft.
Auburn, you've had good success at Auburn.
Had some good success at Auburn. Had a real nice young man from 2002, was a first-round pick for us for the Steelers, named Kendall Simmons, and he's a very, very highly thought-of guy there, a real sharp guy. He owns a ranch, farm, whatever it is, nice spread down there now, and I think he's kind of a mentor to a few of the guys. So they've asked him, and he's referred them to us.
So when you have a high pick and possible number one pick, do you go into the combine differently next week with that client?
You're a lot more confident, I'll tell you that, mm-hmm. because, I mean, when you meet a guy like that, your goal is to not screw him up. I mean, anybody that's 6'6", 335 pounds, that can run under 5 flat and do 360 dunks against my will up at the Village. I just don't want to get them injured. That's all.
But you don't have to work the room.
No, they come to you. Yeah. That's one thing. If you walk into the room with Kate Upton, everybody turns heads and everybody wants to be your friend then. So that's kind of how this business works.
And so leading up to the combine, is this a period of time, Eric, where you're hearing from those people saying, we want to meet with you from certain teams? Has that already started, or are you reaching out to teams? How's that work?
Not as much. I mean, the combine's kind of their, other than the film and the height, weight, and speed grades they have on them, it's their first chance to get to know them, to put them up on the board, watch tape with them, get to know them as a person, get a feel for their football knowledge, their character, things of that sort. So the combine, the meetings are more focused towards free agency.
And in free agency this year, how many clients do you have?
We've got about 4 or 5 pretty highly thought of unrestricted free agents. And I guess we're not supposed to be talking about them at the combine, but you want to make sure that every team with a lot of cap room, you sit down with them and they proactively call you.
Mm-hmm. And so, and those clients are? Can you tell me or no?
Can't really say at this point.
Can't say at this point. You're still working on some things.
Yeah,
I got you.
A few out there.
I got you. I understand. Eric Metz with us in studio. So if you had a client in the Richie Incognito Jonathan Martin case, what would you be saying to that client?
With Richie, everybody that I had that ever played with Richie thinks very highly of him. They think he's a tremendous player. They think he's a great leader. He is obviously a very tough, ferocious football player. But I remember when he was with the Rams and they weren't going to renew his contract, the whole front office said, we've agreed to let Richie go. We just have to flip a coin and decide who's going to tell him because we're scared to death of the guy. But that's what you're looking for in a football player, unfortunately, sometimes. You'd like him to be able to have an on and off switch, but it just doesn't work that way. And, you know, with Richie, you just try to – he's a very smart individual. But, you know, I'm not a psychiatrist or anything like that. Sure. But, you know, your first knee-jerk reaction is, hey, you might want to get a little counseling on the side. But he's a very highly thought of person amongst players. And the other guy just didn't want to play football. That's all it was. And appears to have come up with a convenient excuse to maybe continue to get paid.
Have you seen a case like this before?
I've seen it, but I've never seen it where it dragged on so long. There was such a big deal made out of it. And based on the findings of Mr. Wells' report yesterday, this is something that should have been resolved in November.
And the Wells report, Richie went to Twitter yesterday, and there's been a lot made about that. Does he know what's in there that's coming? Is that why he went to Twitter yesterday?
Yes, he's aware of the fact that it shows that he really didn't do anything out of the norm that happens in a lot of locker rooms. Mm-hmm. And I think the part that disappointed him most is that he felt that he was a mentor and a friend to John. And, you know, John, unfortunately, Richie revealed some other things, but seeing what Richie went through, I see why he reached a boiling point and said, hey, this guy told me he wanted to kill himself, told me he hated football, and so on and so forth. And I never revealed those things, you know, I mean, prior to this happening. So I think he's probably very bitter of what happened between someone that he considered a friend.
Have you told clients, hey, stay off Twitter?
Stay off social media? But that's because I'm 53 years old, so I can say that, but I can't even keep my kids off Twitter. So good luck with a guy that I didn't know the first 22 years.
But it speaks to, in this day and age with players, when you're representing them, do you have to hold your breath with social media? If we're just talking that, or when you're interviewing a client, potential client, it's, this guy's not going to have me awake in the middle of the night.
No, certainly once, I don't, you know, myself and my partners, Ethan Locke and Vance Milinovich, we pretty much, other than a few exceptions, attract pretty normal guys, for lack of a better term. But you make them aware of the fact that if they get drafted by the New England Patriots, he's going to put up their Facebook page and their Twitter account and point out all the things that are not good and how he wants them to take it down right away. We had a client one year who was a first-round running back, Lawrence Maroney, in 2006.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
He went in, and Bill Belichick said, hey, you seem to like the marketing and the media. He said, yeah, I do. He said, well, you don't anymore. You're not going to speak, and you're not going to do any of that stuff while you're here.
Hmm.
Okay, so that guy, that's probably the kind of locker room, and we'll get into it later, that certain individuals need to end up in order to excel in their career. And he probably learned from somebody like Bill Parcells, who took an average player in college, a third-round pick like Curtis Martin, and made him into a Hall of Famer.
And then there's other organizations where does it concern you if they don't go to that extreme?
Yes, it's not the case anymore, but in the old days, you were afraid if a guy went to the Raiders. You didn't want him to go to a dysfunctional organization. Not that the Raiders are the reason that our client Jamarcus Russell didn't have success, but I think if he goes to New England, it's a different set of circumstances. I'm not saying he would have been Tom Brady, but
you're fine.
My two phones are buzzing.
But only two.
You want players to end up, you don't have a choice in this system, but you prefer that your players end up in a stable organization with very good coaches. And that's not easy to do because there's 32 organizations, and you might have a great general manager. You might have an offensive lineman that goes to a team with a great owner, a great general manager, and a great head coach, and an excellent offensive coordinator. But if they don't have a good offensive line coach that teaches technique well and knows how to make adjustments on the fly during the game, they're setting the player up for failure.
So when you have a high first-round pick offensive tackle this year, you're actually probably having him work out with former coaches.
Correct.
And it's Bob Wiley, I believe it is.
Bob Wiley's working with him, among other coaches. And then I have guys like Scott Peters, who played in the league, that have a good hold on the hand fighting and things of that sort that goes on in the league. And then this past weekend, Tyron Smith, one of our players who was in the Pro Bowl, who actually in his third year has only just turned 23.
Mm.
So they're within 24 months of each other age-wise and relate to one another well. And Tyron just taught him a lot of the things that he learned his first few years in the league. So you hit it from a number of different angles, from older coaches, maybe guys that are zone-blocking guys, maybe guys that do vertical sets, the hand fighting things, and as well as current and former players.
When you have a player like that, is it one of those where, as a group, you just say, we can't believe that we continue to get such good people. Because I have people, Eric, that will say to me, I wish I were doing anything but being a stockbroker or a real estate guy. I could be the next agent that goes out and gets it. But it's a ton of work.
It's that grass is greener mentality. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to sit here, and we've been friends for a long time. There's plenty of days, like every other business, you wonder, why am I doing the agent mm-hmm. business? Is there a way I can get out of this? And I have a grass is greener mentality. I think driving 8 miles from my house down the street doing what you do would be a lot more enjoyable. And people want to do what you do. But I look at the stockbroker side. I look at people on Wall Street. I look at people that go to Cambodia and help kids with no food or water, and think that there are other things that are more rewarding. But it is enjoyable with a young man like Greg Robinson, who was raised in a tough environment but has, you know, tremendous manners, treats everybody with respect. And someone like that is very enjoyable to work with through this process.
Eric Metz with us for a couple of minutes. Next week is the Combine. Eric Metz is going to be at the Combine. Eric Sorensen is going to the Combine. We'll be doing the shows from the Combine in Indianapolis next week. Part of what we do here at Sports 360 AZ is get out on the road and have some fun. Michael Sam, not the first, correct?
Correct.
If this story were 15, 20 years ago, with the Jerry Smith story when it first came out, 30 years ago.
30.
It's just we're in a different media cycle now. That's where I think this story has really taken a different turn.
I think it's twofold. A is the media side of it. Obviously, it's much more progressive now than it was even 10 years ago. And the other side is this generation of players is much more progressive than the previous generation of players. People were less tolerant and things of that sort. That's why some are troubled that some of the people higher up that are making the decisions aren't like those 1900 players that are an average age of 25 or 26 years old that are a bit more tolerant of such a situation.
Meaning the league is, they're trying to say the right things, but they're not really sure how to grasp this because we're talking about an older generation.
One of the things that occurred to me was that the compensatory picks for free agents from last year, mm-hmm. those compensatory picks have not been given out yet. I think when they're given out, you know, and I'm a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, yeah. Grassy knoll.
I think some extra pick at the end of the third round may be awarded to a team such as the Patriots that can handle a situation like this, saying, hey, we're going to give you an extra pick. I mean, this is a big PR situation for the league as well, and this cannot be mishandled. You can't send them to the wrong locker room.
And how many right locker rooms are there, in your opinion, in the NFL right now? You don't have to list the teams, but
6 or 7.
Yeah.
There's 6 or 7 places that they could handle it and handle it well and have handled it before internally where things haven't reached the public. But anytime you get 60, 26-year-olds on the average age in a locker room, you're not going to bat 1,000. There's going to be a potential for a couple of guys to fly off the handle and maybe say the wrong thing at the wrong time. But I think this Michael Sam, I've never met him, but he appears to be a class act that a lot of people like. And I was impressed that Sheldon Richardson came out and said mm-hmm. he was his roommate and he thought the world of the guy. And Sheldon Richardson was an all-world player as a rookie. So I think it's going to be an easier transition than some people think. He'll have a bigger problem with older people and older drunk fans in the stands saying things. But I think it might be a situation where it pulls the team closer together because his teammates are going to stick up for him. Mm-hmm. And the biggest problem you have is maybe one of his buddies sticking up for him going up in the stands and going after one of these people, whether it's a home or an away game.
Could the Cardinals handle him? You've dealt with that organization.
Oh, I think Bruce Arians would do a tremendous job. Not just Bruce, but Steve Keim. The whole organization can handle him, and that's a real together locker room, very mature locker room. Great leaders, you know, from Larry Fitzgerald and Lyle Sendlein on offense to the whole defensive crew they have there. I think they'd do a great job with him here.
Because we remember the Kerry Rhodes story when Kerry left, that there were rumors about Kerry Rhodes. We never have seen Kerry Rhodes come back on board again. That's not to say that he was or he was not gay, but it was certainly was out there.
Oh, it's an issue. There's no doubt about it. It would have been different if Kerry Rhodes was the same player he was when he was 25.
No, that's true.
Kerry was
that's
older, true. And you get to a point, this new collective bargaining agreement has phased out that middle class of players. You're either under your rookie contract or you're an extremely talented, high-salaried older player.
We'll take a break with Eric Metz. On the other side, so I want war stories. You have war stories, don't you?
Plenty of
them. You have combine stories. What peeing in cups used to be all that it took, right?
That was the old days when they first started steroid testing 25 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. How's it changed? Eric Metz, Valley agent, actually one of the more respected nationally. Not that there aren't disrespected, but there's a few that out there. A few little riffraff, like in our business, like any business. Eric Metz in studio with Brad Sussmat, Sports 360 AZ, AZ Central Sports, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter at Brad Sussmat. Stay with us.
For in-depth, unique coverage from the high schools to the pros, follow us on Twitter at Sports 360 AZ.
Sports 360 AZ, Brad Sussmat, and of course AZ Central Sports. We are with you Monday through Friday. Appreciate you jumping on board. Eric Metz is in studio, longtime Valley sports agent. The NFL Combine is next week. You do exclusively NFL, correct?
Correct.
Football?
Yes.
Ever thought about other sports?
Boy, every time I see a new contract in baseball, I regret not getting into that sport.
Golf?
Golf would be great. A lot of travel, though.
Yeah, yeah. The post-career for these guys being their agent, more difficult than being the representative when they're playing, is it?
It's a case-by-case basis. You know, with somebody like Rondé Barber or Hunter Hillenmeyer, who got his MBA while he was playing linebacker for the Chicago Bears, it's not very difficult for guys like that. Everybody has their own challenges coming out, and I think the most difficult part for most of them is walking away from the game, not from the football side of it, but they miss the camaraderie of the locker room.
And the 70,000 screaming fans. The running out of the field and the adrenaline rush, that's what I see out of former players, is they really, many of them, don't seem to know how to assimilate to, yeah, I have to stand in line to get a table now. Yeah, I'm not going to be given the car to drive. I'm not, and I don't have the endless supply of money. And it's like the first few years those players are searching and reaching.
Correct. It's difficult, and there's two things that occur. That's why a lot of them like to stay in the city where they had success, because people recognize them and there's more job opportunities and things of that sort. And then the second part is now you have a lot of players in their 40s walking on eggshells because they see what's happened to their teammates from concussions and things of that sort, and their bodies breaking down. So have a lot of former players that, as I mentioned, are walking on eggshells and are in fear that they could wake up the next day or the first time they misplace their keys. Is this the beginning of dementia? Is this when the problems begin? You know, do I have ALS? Things that happened to Kevin Turner and Ted Johnson, and, obviously the worst cases are the Junior Seau's and Dave Durison and Andre Waters and people of that sort. So there's much more fear nowadays of what's going to happen to your body down the road.
What do agents think about the whole concussion situation? When you guys talk among one another or your group or your body, what do you think about where it is?
It's not so much of what we think, but of what our players think. And a lot of them are saying, hey, they understand what a business it is, and now they understand that it's a lot more detrimental to their body for the long haul. And a lot of guys just, they want to make their money, they want to save their money, and then they want to get on with their lives. And there's a heightened awareness of preparing for life after football. The league does it. The NFLPA does it. The union does it. The individual player is cognizant of that throughout his career, that this can end on any one hit. So,
do they do enough though? The league.
It's hard because to play pro football, you have to be, you can't be 99% in. You have to be 100% into this and dedicate yourself and work your tail off in the off season. That's why my hat really goes off to people that are able to prepare for their second career while they're playing pro football. It's very difficult to do and have success in that league if you're not completely focused on football.
And we see that. I'll throw a name at you. John Lynch is somebody that I covered in high school. I worked for his father in the broadcast business. And I could tell from very early on that Johnny was going to do very well in life after football. But there's other ones that have really struggled with it.
Well, John's an anomaly. Here's a guy that could have played pro baseball, went to Stanford, would be valedictorian no matter where he went. Good-looking, nice family guy. I mean, there's so many options for people like John. But being around college campuses for 30 years, I figured out that there's far more people on the other end of the spectrum, guys that don't even belong in college, but there's no other avenue with which to get to pro football. there's a lot more guys like that than there are John Lynch's and Rondé Barber's in this league.
People are watching this right now, and there are some dads that are thinking that they, and moms, that they have the next. If you were to advise parents on, my son is going to play football, what position would you advise them to play? Not even take size into account, okay? I'm asking this question, Eric, because is the game changing? And as you see it down the road, concussions change in penalties, change in position, bigger, stronger, faster. Are there positions that you think are more dangerous than others now when you watch the game?
Oh, the danger. Yeah, correct. I mean, you've seen what's happened to Troy Aikman and guys like that. It hasn't kicked in yet, but quarterbacks take a ton of hits. Quarterbacks, running backs, defenseless receivers, tight ends, things of that sort. Offensive and defensive linemen, there's tons of collisions, and there's major collisions on every play, but they're in a shorter area. Safeties are flying up, hitting guys. If you're a cover corner and you're like Deion and you refuse to tackle people, you're just going to cover them. That might be the way to go. Punter certainly seems like a good job that you can do for 20 years.
But will punters and kickers, as rule changes go,
will they
even be in the game in a few years?
It's not so much the punter, but the punt return.
Yeah, that's true.
Very exciting.
Kick return.
So kick returns as well, but your team has to have a chance to win at the end of the game, and it's difficult if you get the ball at the 20 with 29 seconds left in the game mm-hmm. to go all the way down and score a touchdown. But you can get to the 35-yard line and try a long field goal to win it. I mean, that still keeps that element of excitement and the fact that your team is still in the game with less than a minute left when they get the ball on the 20.
But you don't think that position will be eliminated?
Never.
As rule changes are going, that's what I'm looking at is, are we going to get to a point where they just start the ball at the 20 and the kickoff is completely gone because of the collisions? Are we going to get to a point where you may punt the ball to start a game? I just see the game changing so much. Am I overreacting to this?
Yeah, I think definitely overreacting.
Really?
They like the hits. You know, it's like stopping fighting in hockey.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of hockey players that are pretty beat up, that are out of the sport, and their problems may not have been as publicized as some of the ones in football. But the element of violence, the MMA wouldn't be so successful mm-hmm. if fans didn't like that. So they're not going to turn this into touch football by any stretch.
But are they, in terms of offense versus defense, is it becoming more of let's get scoring, let's get the big hits out of the game?
They've always made it the scoring since they put the Mel Blunt rule in and made it that you couldn't bump the receivers more than 5 yards downfield. They've made this pretty advantageous for the offense.
Sure.
What happened is, yeah, you're worried about these head-to-head shots and things of that sort, mainly from a liability issue. They know that this is worth a lot more than $765 million. That's coming down, and I commend the judge in Philadelphia for saying, hold on a minute here.
Yeah, I think all of us were like, come on, you got to be kidding me. That's all that these guys are getting?
Yeah, even if it was multi-billions, it probably wouldn't be enough to cover it over the years and for future years.
Now, the combine itself, how has it changed? We talked about you used to have to pee in a cup to beat a steroid test. So take me back on when steroids first came in and what the testing was like at the combine.
Well, from 83 to 87, there was no steroid test. So you had a lot of guys that you could tell from the minute they walked in the room who was on steroids and who wasn't. Fans were getting a little disenchanted by the whole thing, saying the NFL was turning into a freak show. So not out of care for the players, but to sell it better to the fans, they said, we're going to institute steroid testing. And it happened to be the first or second year of the steroid testing. I had a client that I suspected did it. Of course, he lied to me and told me he didn't. And the night before he was to take his drug test, he called me to his room and handed me a cup and said, pee in this cup for me. And I said, I'm not going to do that. He said, you have to do this. I said, why? He said, I've been taking steroids. I said, this would have been helpful information about 2 months ago, but it's a little bit too late now, and I'm not doing that. But I mean, the liability, I'd lose my license.
Wow.
I've got a family to feed. And
Come on, you're my agent.
Do this for me, or I'll find another one.
Right, right.
Good luck.
I mean, knock yourself out.
He didn't have the success. And ironically, this player was busted in Mexico and had his Jeep taken from him because he was buying steroids at La Farmacia in the late 80s.
That's great. I remember being in a Raiders locker room with the late Lyle Alzado and John Matuszak, and it would have been in about the mid-80s. And I remember I'm maybe 19. 19, and I'm trying to interview them after a game, and they were so disformed and disfigured, and their bodies were one big pimple, it looked like. And they're both gone now, of course. Mm-hmm. But I'll never forget the gruesome sight of seeing two great names, Alzado and Matuzak, just looking like hell had taken over their body. I mean, it really did ravage the league at that point.
It was killing guys left and right, a lot that weren't publicized. And I'm from Pittsburgh, so I'm glad that we won four Super Bowls before they started instituting those rules. But you saw it happening on college campuses, too. And I was recruiting Vinny Testaverde in 86 or something like that down at University of Miami. And we were all in their dorm room right before they were getting ready to leave and get on the bus. And one of the players just comes right out in the living room area, loads up a syringe, pulls down his pants and starts shooting himself in the butt with this thing. As he's doing it, Jimmy Johnson, the head coach, walks in the door and says, "Hey, the bus is getting ready to leave." And then he sees this guy doing it and he says, "I didn't see anything." Closes the door and he walks out. That's when I knew that this was a big problem.
That's great. Well, look, I appreciate you coming in. Anything else around the combine that is of interest to you? I think the Sam, from the media standpoint, the attention around Michael Sam will be crazy. You have a big time client that's there, but is there anything else around the combine this year that you think will be interesting from your point of view?
Probably just, it's more along the free agent side, because that's what most of the general managers are focused on there. Since the draft is until May 8th through 10th, there's plenty of time to evaluate those prospects. And that's all on tape, and the interviews are on tape and things of that sort. So most teams, or every club with salary cap room, is interested in meeting with the agents for players that are going to be unrestricted, mm-hmm. and finding which ones may fit them. But there's plenty of behind-the-scenes deals that are made that are, a club will renege on March 11th.
You get lied to?
Everybody does. It's a liar's business. Jerry Jones said it best once. He tried to do a trade with the 49ers, and they screwed him on it, essentially. And he hung up the phone, and his son, Steven, who's my age, said, "Dad, how can you ever deal with them again?" And Jerry Jones made a prophetic statement. He said, "If I didn't deal with people who lied to me in this business, I'd be sitting by myself in a room without the phone ever ringing." It's just the nature of the business.
When you have an organization, I know I'm running along here, but it's fine. When you have an organization like Cleveland, who's just getting kicked all over the place for being quote unquote dysfunctional, and they pick up the phone and call you, do you tread lightly because there's been so much change there?
No, I know Jimmy Haslam because he was a part owner of the Steelers before he went over. Mm-hmm. And I think I give him credit for having the guts to try to make it right, even if it looks bad at the beginning. So he's gutting this thing, has a great guy in Ray Farmer in there, a guy they feel that would be a good head coach in Mike Pettine. But the two things you fight in Cleveland, regardless of how much money that they give you, is it's Cleveland. Okay, and they haven't had a history of winning, you know, since the 80s.
Yeah, no, I get it. It's just, I look at it and say, I think I remember this movie in about the mid-80s over here in Arizona, and things have changed.
That's the way that it used to. This was not a desirable destination.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, well, Rob Fredrickson wanted to come here in 99 when we signed here, because they had gone to the playoffs the year before in 98. But it's a much more desirable destination to come to the Arizona Cardinals now than it was, you know, 15, 20 years ago.
Why haven't you worked for an organization? Why have you stayed in the biz? Because I see guys that have made the jump, but have you ever thought I could work for an organization?
You think about it, and then you talk to people in the league, and they said, if you're looking for less aggravation in your life, this isn't the way to go. Mm. And another friend who had contemplated hiring me a long time ago, he said, the first thing you need to do is kiss your wife and kids goodbye, because you will never see them again. Mm. Because it's so intensive. You're working for an owner, and they expect everything from you. You're there 24/7, and you don't get home for dinner very often, and it's not very conducive to having a good home life.
We said earlier on the Sam front, you said there's a handful of teams. Are there a handful of good owners?
Oh, absolutely.
Are there more than a handful of good owners in the league?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Is there a handful of teams that are just never going to get it right with their ownership group? I'm not asking by names because I know you have a job to do.
But sometimes you get lucky, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tom Brady was drafted in the sixth round. It's not like the plan was for Mo Lewis to crack their $100 million quarterback, Drew Bledsoe, in the chest. The sixth-round pick gets in and ends up being all world.
Right, right.
Same as Kurt Warner. Kurt Warner was over in NFL Europe playing for Al Luganville, splitting time with Jake DeLome. This guy wasn't earmarked for the Hall of Fame, but, you know, because of his perseverance and how much he improved as a player, Kurt Warner's a Hall of Fame. He's a Hall of Fame candidate and will probably get in.
I had a running back who was on the sidelines for Al Luganville at San Diego State, and he was a corner. And the first string running back gets a handoff. His name was T.C. Wright, and he was a J.C. All-American. And T.C. gets laid out. And there's Michael Pittman over on the sidelines, and the coach says, "Hey, Pittman, get in the game." Pittman can't find his helmet, and he's like, "Oh, shoot." Says something else. Falk, get in the game. 368 yards later against the late George Allen in Long Beach State and 7 touchdowns, that was the beginning of Marshall Falk. Now, if Pittman has his helmet, where's Marshall Falk? I mean, it's the luck of the game sometimes.
It's the Wally Pipp story.
Yeah, no, it's true. Appreciate you coming in, as always, and sharing stories.
Thanks for having me.
Eric Metz, one of the really good guys in the business, gets it done. Local guy, too. Appreciate his time jumping on board with us. Brad Sussmat with you again next week. Eric will be out at the Combine. Eric Metz will be. Eric Sorensen will be at the Combine. We'll have coverage from there in Indianapolis on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports.
For unique angles, content, and guests, check out our podcast center, available 24/7, 365 at sports360az.com.
Sports360az.com and AZ Central Sports. Thanks again to Eric Metz coming in studio. It's always fun just to swap stories around the NFL, right? Or just any sport. So often we just get caught up in the day of stuff, and I got to sat there and told war stories all morning long. It's fun. This segment brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. The President's Day sales event, it gets started today. We have President's Day weekend. President's Day sales starts today at Santan Ford. So if you're one of those folks that's looking for the best time to buy a vehicle and do it, hey, honey, here's the Valentine's gift. We're going to get a new car, a new truck. Whatever it may be, they have the Fusion at $149 per month, 24 months, red carpet lease, $1,688 cash due at signing. You can get a 2014 Ford Fusion, just like the car that I'm driving, I'm very happy with, from Santan Ford. Right now, up to $8,500 cash back on the 2013 Ford F-150. $8,500 cash back. It's the F-150. That's at Santan Ford. Santan Ford, just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. General Manager Tim Hovick and company, they do it upright. Why not stop in for yourself and check it out at Santan Ford? Santan Ford, where it is all about you, a big part of what we do. In fact, our Combine coverage sponsored by Santan Ford next week. So, E, when we have guys that come in studio and just swap war stories, when they're done, I always think, well, I should have asked him this or that war story. But anytime I can get Al Davis and Jerry Jones war stories worked in, or a Jimmy Johnson syringe in the butt story, yep, worked in, I'm going good.
And Metz is always going to be honest. I mean, that guy has seen – he's probably seen 1,000 more things than what he just told you in the last half hour of the show.
Sure. No, no, I get you.
And some of those things need to remain anonymous and cannot be over broadcast airwaves. But, NFL is a dirty business. He pretty much said himself. It's a liar's club.
Well, I think pro sports is that way.
Sure. But,
and even college,
but everything
sports
is elevated in the NFL because, finger quotes, the NFL is king. So
no, I understand that. But so you're going to the Combine. What are your stories that you're thinking about wanting to hit? Because you're going to be in the middle of Michael Sam, but does that really Arizona-centric? And you're going to be one of, what, 500 guys back there trying to get to Michael
Sam? At least. Locally, there's two obvious local stories are – there are a pair of running backs that I'm sure teams are going to be very curious to kick the tires on, Kadeem Carey and Marion Grice, especially Grice coming off the injury that cost him the last, was it two games of the season, the Pac-12 title game and the bowl loss to Texas Tech. So, and then there's Will Sutton. I mean, the last time we saw Will Sutton on the field, he
wasn't good.
He wasn't good, and he wasn't in shape. So we'll have to see exactly what he did from after the Holiday Bowl until next week in Indianapolis.
Well, in Grice's case, he didn't play against U of A either, so it's technically three games.
Three games, yep.
And I don't know if he's going to – I've not seen where he is going to work out there. I mean, he may roll in. Here's the thing on the Combine. Eric gets to go, and he's going to go do his thing. But the last several years, they don't even let you go onto the field to watch the Combine.
No.
You're literally there watching a television, and then they bring the players in to you.
Correct.
At the Combine.
Correct. The players go into a separate entrance away from the media in the RCA Dome. When they get done working out, the NFL escorts them up into these giant, I don't know, press areas out on the concourse of the dome, and you get to talk to them, and then they vanish behind the curtains, and you never see them again. But you're watching it all on NFL Network, so it's like going to cover a sporting event, but not getting to see the actual event.
Yeah, well, it's like when I went to the Super Bowl this last time with the Cardinals, they had us up in the stands at
Same
Tampa.
Deal.
And
Same
then we
deal.
Went downstairs, and we had to watch the end of the, we were on the field for a little bit.
That's good. Yeah, you don't get that kind of access with at the Combine.
Yeah.
But it's still a great event, and it's turned into like a mega show. It used to be a little deal, then it was a deal, and now it's a huge extravaganza.
Well, and I think if you're the Arizona Cardinals, let's just say, and you're at the Combine, you're Steve Keim, and you're at the Combine, I think Eric made a good point that I hadn't thought of. This is now changing into just another time to get in front of NFL people, organizations, to talk about the free agency class. Because you don't have to have your whole group down there watching every last bit of the Combine. I mean, you don't have to have that anymore. If you're Steve Keim, you've got to figure out Carlos Dansby. You've got to figure out Jay Feely. You've got to figure out Rashard Mendenhall. You've got to figure out Eric Winston. So from the Cardinals' end of things, those are the free agents that they have. Their first-round pick, it's not going to be 24-7 while they're back there on the who they're going to take with their first-round pick or even the later-round picks. There's just a whole business side that's changed. It's on the calendar because things are so spread out now. It's two extra weeks of saying, what are they going to do at number one? Is his client, who's a left tackle, going to rise all the way to number one? Or will Johnny Manziel be taken with the number one overall pick? You know, what direct that debate will go on and on and on, assuming his client is able to go up that high. So I'm pretty fascinated by the Combine this year. I'm glad you're going.
I'm glad I'm going too.
I should be going. I don't know why I'm not.
One of these days.
I know. It's always the calendar. Some other things, though, that I've not gotten to in this first hour. So the Derek Jeter story, when that happened yesterday, I was driving along as it broke. And I was listening to the MLB Network and those folks on the National View. And it hit me, and I didn't hear the conversation yesterday, but where does Jeter rank from my point of view? I'm out here in Arizona. His whole career, I've been here in Arizona. So I've not seen Derek Jeter more than a couple of times. And, of course, the World Series, I think I interviewed him a couple times with everybody else that was there. Where does he go down in terms of the shortstops that I've seen? I grew up in an era where Ozzie Smith was in my backyard. I saw the Wizard of Oz every day. And then I saw a guy named Gary Templeton that came in a trade for Ozzie Smith. And he was pretty good, too, more of an offensive player. But I never saw a better defensive player than Ozzie Smith. Now, on a national level, when I look at Derek Jeter, and I admire the heck out of Derek Jeter from this regard, many regards, but from this one in particular. Derek Jeter, you couldn't tell me who his agent is today. You couldn't tell me anything other than he's dated a few supermodels because the tabloids are going to follow him around everywhere and he can't keep that quiet or keep it private. But I don't hear, I've never heard of anything about Derek Jeter. If I were starting a team and I had to choose between, let's say, Cal Ripken and Derek Jeter, I would want more power, I would go with Ripken. If I wanted the better player defensively, I'd go with Jeter myself. I'm sure Red Sox fans, even though his last game will be in Boston, I hope that they give him a standing ovation. A Red Sox fan may be completely put off by that. There's not a chance I would on. No, I think the Red Sox fans can be classy and understand that his final regular season game will be at Fenway Park. And right now, the tickets for the Yankees' last home game, the average ticket price for the last home game this coming year is already up to $1,100 per ticket.
Not surprising at all.
That's a 265% rise in ticket price in the last 24 hours.
If you're a Yankee fan, that's a game you'd love to
be
at.
You have to be at that.
No question.
You know, and so you look at how Mariano Rivera handled when he stepped aside this last year. I mean, what a class act that was. Rivera handled himself so well. You've got Jeter this year, and then next year you're going to have all the A-Rod mess. It's amazing how you have all this Alex Rodriguez just disaster going on. But Jeter, the day before spring training, says, I'm done. That's it. He's going to be 39 at the end of the year. He's going to ride off into the sunset. I don't know if we'll ever hear from him again, but I really admire what he's all about, even though I've never covered him on a day-by-day basis. It's pretty cool. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports on Twitter, at Brad Sussmat, and White Mountain Radio. Thanks for being with us.